Hello and welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thanks for joining us. In today's lecture, we're going to continue our discussion of air pollution. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the second half of Chapter 14 from the Aaron's text. Last lecture, we talked about what makes something an air pollutant. We identified many different types and discussed the differences between primary and secondary pollutants. We also discussed in detail the most common primary pollutants. Today we're going to go over a few more primary pollutants and cover secondary pollutants, and then talk about how weather is related to the severity of air pollution. We'll finish up with a discussion of indoor air pollution. First, let's finish up our discussion of primary pollutants that we started during our last podcast by talking about carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide is often written as CO and is a colorless, odorless, and poisonous gas produced by incomplete burning of carbon in fuels. It is the most abundant primary pollutant in which cities with sources with incomplete combustion of gasoline are prone. It is toxic to humans and to animals. It has cardiovascular and central nervous system effects, such that people who breathe high levels of CO can develop vision problems, reduced ability to work or learn, reduced manual dexterity, and difficulty performing complex tasks. At extremely high levels, CO is poisonous and can cause death. We have one more primary pollutant to discuss, which is lead, but we'll wait to talk about that in the context of indoor air pollution. For now, let's move on to secondary pollutants. Remember that secondary pollutants are not emitted directly to the atmosphere. They result from chemical reactions between primary pollutants. For example, smog. Cities like Los Angeles and Mexico City are prone to smog. It's so dangerous that in London, England, the 1952 smog disaster killed approximately 4,000 people. But what is it? Smog is the result of photochemical reactions. Photo comes from photons and energy from the sun, and chemical comes from the fact that these reactions deal with chemical compounds in the atmosphere. The result of chemical reactions in the presence of sunlight is known as photochemistry and produces photochemical smog. Normal folks just say smog. For example, nitrogen oxides emitted from cars absorb solar radiation, causing chemical reactions to occur. If certain VOCs are present, other more dangerous and toxic compounds can be formed. And remember, VOCs were volatile organic compounds containing hydrogen and carbon. Now, during the last podcast, I referred to acid rain many times. Now we get the chance to talk about it in detail and how acid rain causes changes and damage in the environment. Fossil fuel burning releases tons of sulfur and nitrogen oxides. These pollutants can be converted into acids, like sulfuric acid or nitric acid. They leave the atmosphere by wet deposition, which is simply rain or snow, and dry deposition in the form of dust and smoke, which may leave a thin film on the surface. The effects of acid rain are diverse. They can kill and damage trees, melt and damage stone statues and structures, and change the pH of lakes and rivers, which kills fish and other wildlife. For trees, the damage is twofold. The leaves themselves can be damaged and burned by the acid, reducing the plant or tree's ability to perform photosynthesis. And the acid rain can change the pH of the soil, essentially killing the plant through the uptake of acidic water through the roots. Acid rain is very dependent on the source of the pollution, such as power plants, but is also dependent on the weather and wind directions, since the emissions from power plants in cities travel with the mean or current wind. Weather is important for pollution transport, with wind and atmospheric stability playing the largest roles. Wind speed determines the concentration of pollution by determining how turbulent the air is and how fast the plume moves and is mixed with clean air. Wind direction determines what area is affected and whether it travels toward people or not. Atmospheric stability determines the extent to which vertical motions will mix the pollution with cleaner air above, or if it will be trapped under an inversion. When we have a temperature inversion, which is an increase in air temperature with height, we have warm air suspended over cooler air. This commonly occurs in places like Los Angeles and Mexico City, and the inversion acts as a lid and can trap pollution. This is one of the main reasons why LA and Mexico City have such a horrible pollution problem. Without a temperature inversion, when the warm air at the surface with cool air on top is the standard, we have mixing and the pollution can rise, and in a confined valley, this would allow the pollution to escape. Remember that the environmental lapse rate is the temperature decrease with height, and it's usually about 6.5 degrees Celsius per 1,000 meters. During a temperature inversion, we have a cool layer trapped below a warm layer. The height at which the temperature increase occurs corresponds to where the pollution gets stopped. Your rising warm air is inhibited by the inversion and can't escape. Since we've been talking about polluted cities, especially LA and Mexico City, let's move our discussion over to urban and indoor air pollution. Remember our last primary pollutant, which was lead? Well, it is one of those pollutants that's really only a problem in urban and indoor environments. Lead used to come from automotive sources when lead used to be in gasoline. That's why we have signs and notes telling us to only use unleaded gasoline now in our cars. Lead is very dangerous. It damages organs and causes damage to the kidneys, liver, brain, and nerves, and other organs. Exposure may lead to osteoporosis and reproductive disorders as well. It affects the brain and nerves, and excessive exposure to lead causes seizures, mental retardation, behavioral disorders, memory problems, and mood changes. Low levels of lead damage the brain and nerves in fetuses and young children, resulting in learning deficiencies and lowered IQ. With government action, we have reduced lead in the atmosphere to almost zero since 1970, when we started enacting laws to prevent its usage in gasoline. We can now compare how well we've done in reducing lead in the atmosphere to the other primary pollutants we've talked about. Between 1970 and 2000, we've seen CO decrease by about 25%, NOx increase by about 20%, VOCs decrease by 43%, and SO2 decrease by 44%. The increase in NOx is related to there being more cars on the road, but the decrease in VOCs is related to more fuel-efficient cars. Let's move on to indoor air pollutants and what's going on in our homes. Indoor air generally contains higher concentrations of pollutants than outdoor air. Around 3 billion people cook and heat their homes using open fires and stoves burning biomass and coal. Nearly 50% of pneumonia deaths among children under 5 are due to particulate matter inhaled from indoor air pollution. More than 1 million people a year die from chronic obstructive respiratory disease, or COPD, that develops due to exposure to such indoor air pollution. Both women and men exposed to heavy indoor smoke are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop COPD. Air pollution contributes to lung disease, including respiratory tract infections, asthma, and lung cancer. Lung disease claims close to 335,000 lives in America every year and is the third leading cause of death in the U.S. Over the last decade, the death rate for lung disease has risen faster than for almost any other major disease. Poor indoor air quality can cause or contribute to the development of chronic respiratory diseases such as asthma and hypersensitivity pneumonitis. In addition, it can cause headaches, dry eyes, nasal congestion, nausea, and fatigue. People who already have respiratory diseases are at much greater risk. You might be asking, what are the main contributors to indoor air pollution that I should be worried about in my office or my home? In office buildings, heating, cooling, ventilation systems, wax and paints, as well as glues, are the main culprits. In homes and schools, biological pollutants are a large factor, including molds, bacteria, viruses, pollen, dust mites, and animal dander. What should you worry about when it comes to indoor air pollution? Well, the relative importance of any single source depends on how much of a given pollutant it emits and how hazardous those emissions are. For example, an improperly adjusted gas stove can emit significantly more carbon monoxide than one that is properly adjusted. Two important pollutants to avoid are radon and environmental tobacco smoke due to their effect on health. Radon is a naturally occurring gas that is odorless, colorless, and radioactive and can cause cancer. ETS is a smoke emitted from the burning of a cigarette, pipe, or cigar, or smoke inhaled by a smoker. It is also cancer-causing. Another example of a pollutant that was unavoidable was the Legionnaire's disease episode in 1976. In this case, infection by a bacteria occurred after inhaling an aerosol containing Legionella bacteria. Such a particle could originate from any infected water source. If droplets of water from a cooling system contain bacteria, the bacteria cells remain suspended in the air and can be inhaled into the lungs. In 1976, an air conditioning system was contaminated by the bacteria and resulted in the death of 34 American Legion members. The bacteria was discovered and named after this incident. There are many other types of indoor air pollutants, and we'll finish up this podcast by listing the pollutants, a brief description of their health impacts, and what chemical is involved. Heating and cooling ducts can contain mold and bacteria, which causes allergies, asthma, respiratory problems, and infections. Furniture, carpets, foam insulation, and pressed wood contain formaldehyde, which can cause respiratory irritation and cancer. Leaky or unvented gas in wood stoves and furnaces, or a car left running in a garage, are associated with carbon monoxide, which can cause neural impairment and is fatal at high doses. Gasoline emits VOCs and is a cancer-causing carcinogen. Tobacco smoke contains many toxic chemicals and carcinogenic compounds and is linked to lung cancer and respiratory problems. Computer and office equipment emit VOCs whose emissions cause lung irritation, neural or organ damage, and cancer. Rock and soil beneath houses may emit radon, which is radioactive and can cause lung cancer. Pesticides, paints, and cleaning fluids emit VOCs and other toxic chemicals, which can cause neural or organ damage and cancer. Pets leave animal dander, which is an allergen. Unvented stoves and heaters can emit nitrogen oxides, which cause respiratory problems. Pipe insulation, floor and ceiling tiles could be covered or made with asbestos, which causes asbestosis, which is a serious lung disease. fireplaces and wood stoves can emit particulate matter, causing respiratory problems, lung cancer, and even death. Old paint stored in your home may contain lead, which damages the nervous system and can cause damage to organs. Hot showers with highly chlorinated water can even produce chloroform, which causes nervous system damage. As you can see, there are many toxins and pollutants in your home. And that finishes up our lecture on air pollution and air quality outside and inside your homes. Next time, we'll be talking about global climate change impacts and mitigation. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!